Men have been known to go to war for very strange reasons, but would you think that a war could be caused by one single orange? Ian Sutherland of Wick Heritage Society tells me that this is true. In fact, you can tell me the story of the War of the Orange, Ian.
Or as it is better kent in the Highlands, Cogamora Ruig. That means the big war in Wick. It was on the 27th of August, 1859. That was just about the end of the herring fishing season in Wick at that time. Wick, I should say, then was the premier herring port in Scotland. It was exporting a third of all the herring a get out of Scotland was going out a week in itself. And it attracted something like 3 to 4, sometimes even 5,000 people from the west. Now, by the west in Wick, we mean the mainland and the Western Isles. So all the fishermen going out a week at a time, something like a total of maybe a quarter of them or slightly less would be what we would call healing men for the west. And they had come to Wick by this time for 60 years, and there had never, ever been any trouble. However, on this particular day, it was a Saturday night. Now, it was the custom for the healing men, because it wasn't long after a disruption, and, you know, back to fundamental religion, and a free kirk was sort of taking up its grip on it. They used to go to prayer meetings in preparation for his services the following day. And 1,500 of them was at one prayer meeting in Wick. It was the largest Gaelic-speaking congregation the world has ever seen were in Wick. But at least something like 2,000 to 3,000 other people, because the boats had all been tidied up, everything was finished for the weekend, and it was a custom then just to walk through the streets. In the market square in Wick was a magnet, of course, for people, where you could see friends from all right place, and it also had a lot of stalls and booths, where you had chichons, Irish ragmen, all that kind of people were up with, usually rubbish that they were selling to people, you see. They'd all this fancy patter for the suit. But they didn't realise that most of the folk they were selling to couldn't speak English anyway. It must have been quite funny, but in all this fancy patter of them, they could not speak only Gaelic. But anyway, that didn't deter them. They still did it. And among the crowd that was in there was this boy, Phil Lewis. He was about 11 years old, 11 or 12 years old, just maybe 12, because he was likely run to his father out of fishing. That's likely why he was in Wick. And he had bought an orange for one of these stalls and booths. And he was crossing on and he let it fall. And it fell and rolled to the feet of a boy that belonged to Wick, we think Pontleton, but the boy was slightly bigger, older, 14 or 15, and he lifted up the orange and he wouldn't give back. And of course, the boy had dropped the orange, Fay Lewis, asked some two people at Kent to help him get the orange back. And of course, the men he spoke to, one of them was slightly drunk. And in taking the orange back for the boy Fay Lewis, he struck him. I don't think it was a hard scalp, but he struck him anyway. And just like wildfire, fechting broke out just clear across the market square. They reckon that within 2 minutes, 300 men were fechting in that market square, for no reason at all. And of course, they started breaking up the booths and for using bits of wood that they were made for weapons and clubs and whatever. And it was just a raging torrent. Now, Wick's Polish station at that time was only about 100 yards away anyway. And somebody obviously had run to get help. So a Polish arrived, or one Polishman arrived, in about 10 minutes. And that had the effect. It shows you respect that people had then for law and order. The arrival of one Polishman stopped 300 people for fechting. But he arrested a man for Lewis for hitting the boy. And he took him back to the Polish station. Whereupon, a crowd became very aggressive and hostile because they were saying, well, it wasn't this man's fault in the first place. The word had now spread that an innocent man had been arrested or whatever. And soon, there was a mob besieging the Polish station to get him out. And there was about 3,000, 2,000, 3,000, nobody knows, but 2,000, 3,000 people in the street. But of that, there was about a hardcore 100 that were bent in trouble. The rest were just spectators, really, to see what was going on. Now, the Polish inside, seeing that the mood of the besiegers was getting ugly, sent out for their reinforcements. Well, the whole Polish force was only 3 anyway, but they had a lot of special constables that could be called up, so they were sent for, and 10 of them arrived, and Pontleton had a separate Polish force at that time. It was 3. So it was summoned and all. So, you know, sending for reinforcements of 3 to face a mob of 3,000. But this is what was coming. Anyway, the mob outside was getting ferocious, and one of them, and he was the... Now, I'm not sure if he's the grandfather. I think he would probably be the great-grandfather of the late Donnie Bean MacLeod, a broadcaster. I think it was his great-grandfather. Anyway, he was one of them. He went and got a boat's mast to try and smash down the door of the police station and get this man out. Just about the same time, his specials had arrived, and they hadn't even got their uniforms on. They hadn't attempted the uniforms. They were all rushed in because mayhem seemed to be running riot in the middle of town. And they grabbed... Now, again, I'm not sure which one it was, but they grabbed one of the ringleaders, whether it was Donnie's great-grandfather or no, I don't know, but they grabbed them. And, of course, the crowd hung on his other ear trying to stop him from being arrested. And in the process, his clothes were all torn off, and he was hauled into jail, needle-naked, as they say. So, now, there were two innocent men in the jail, and the crowd was getting wilder and wilder and wilder, and the stones began to get thrown in and out of the jail yard, and they were besieging it, and frantic messages were sent. There was a fishing cruiser lying in St. Clair Bay. Somehow they got a messenger out through the crowd. He galloped off Lackergill, signalled the ship to send a detachment of blue chickens. But, of course, it took hours for them to come. Meanwhile, more specials had been aroused and they'd appeared, and there seemed to be a sort of stalemate for Hoyley. Now, the ringleaders of the S-Hunder, it was the real agitators, withdrew now across the bridge to get out the other side of the river, across the bridge. But what was bothering everybody was there were still 1,500 healing men in this prayer meeting. And what was going to happen when they came out, you see? So they sent an urgent messenger round to tell the minister that was addressing it, saying, for heaven's sake, tell everybody to go straight home. Don't come down to the bridge at all. Go right home. If they came down, that would swell the crowd about nearly 4,000 or 5,000. And against this, you've got about 4 or 5 regular policemen and 10 specials. And the messenger at arms and the sheriff clerk or whoever it was. Because the town council, they hadn't got them rounded up yet. We'll see what's happening. Anyway, the minister, Joaquin Fatung, Reverend Mackay Fatung, he spoke to the congregation and they all agreed that they would go home. And they did, fortunately. And they went home. And the minister himself then came across. And they got 2 or 3 other Gaelic speakers that hadn't taken part in it to try and plead with crowd, go home, and that there'll be a trial on Monday, and if these men were innocent, they'd be let go and all that. So anyway, they did go, but this bunch of healing men had gone across a brig that were on the other side of the brig, hadn't heard any of us, they didn't know. So then they decided to charge. They came charging back across the brig, and they were met, because we had the old Telford Humphrey back at brig at that time, and the police and they met head on in the Midland, and everybody was laying into everybody else with sticks or whatever else they could fin, and a pitched battle they stayed there for, well, till it got dark anyway, darkening pale, and they were still in the middle of gloom, and then a policeman retreated, both sides retreated to sort of regroup to like see the river to see what happened. Darkness had fallen, so a police best and more volunteers had sort of come forward, and they decided to systematically clear the streets, and the policeman did that on what we call the weak side of the river, and then eventually the healing men on the other side of the river dispersed back to their lodgings, which was in Fountainside, on their side of the river anyway.